We are always getting away from the present moment. Our mental existences, which are immaterial and have no dimensions, are passing along the time dimension with a uniform velocity from the cradle to the grave, just as we should travel down if we began our existence 50 miles above the Earth's surface. Welcome to 10 Minute Mitzvah, Episode 22, The Eternal People and the Elasticity of Time. I'm Meir Soloveitchik.
Rabbi Soloveitchik's year-long 10-Minute Mitzvah podcast is generously sponsored by Ivan and Susanna Kaufman.
Let us begin today with a poem that appeared in Punch magazine following the fame of Einstein's theory of relativity. The poem read, "There was a young lady named Bright, whose speed was far faster than light. She set out one day in a relative way, and returned on the previous night." The point of the poem is to marvel and to ponder the nature of time and how it was suddenly, through Einstein, revealed to be more elastic than was previously understood. We bear this in mind as we continue our discussion of the Jewish calendar, which, rightly understood, reveals not only how Jews mark time, but also the Jewish relationship with time itself. Let us briefly summarize what we said yesterday. The calendar of Rabbinic Judaism is primarily lunar. It utilizes months that are based on the waxing and waning of the moon. The lunar nature of the calendar is understood, as we discussed yesterday, to have been given, commanded, with the obligation enunciated in Egypt, "HaChodesh hazeh lachem rosh chodashim." This month shall be for you the first of months. This meant that the calendar is to be based on the moon, and ideally proclaimed by the Supreme Court of the Jewish people, once witnesses arrive to announce that the small sliver of light in the dark sky has been seen. But the lunar calendar of the Jews cannot only be lunar, for the Torah also instructs us in Deuteronomy 16, "Shamor et chodesh ha'aviv v'asita pesach." Preserve, protect the month of spring, and you shall observe the Pesach holiday. This means that Pesach, or Passover as it is colloquially called, must always occur in the spring, simply understood because the spring embodies the rejuvenation and resurrection of the Jewish people that occurred in the Exodus. But if each Jewish month is based on the lunar cycle, which is around 29 and a half days, then we are left with a lunar year of 12 months, which equal 354 days. Because the solar cycle of the year is longer, 365 days, that would mean that Passover gets earlier and earlier by the year, and the month in which it falls would ultimately end up in the winter. How then do we preserve the month of spring? According to Nachmanides, this verse in Deuteronomy is a commandment, a mitzvah all its own, and it is obligating us from time to time to add an extra month in the year. The month that precedes the month of Passover, Adar, is doubled, so that Passover, which falls in the month of Nisan, is delayed. This could be done originally, whenever the Supreme Court deemed it necessary. And today, when we utilize a Jewish calendar that was set up by Hillel II in the 4th century, we utilize a 19-year cycle in which Jewish leap years with an extra month occur every so often, in order to observe this commandment, "Shamor et chodesh ha'aviv," preserve the month of spring, in which Passover falls out. What this means is that at the heart of the Jewish relationship with time, at the heart of the Jewish calendar, is the possibility, as it were, of extending time, making the month of Adar elastic so that it can be doubled. And the larger symbolism of the calendar is that the Jewish relationship with time is unusual, so that moments in time elastically extend far beyond the seemingly impermeable moment in which it exists. Jews, as Rabbi Joseph Soloveitchik said, experience what he called a unitive time consciousness. Moments that occurred in the past do not disappear. They extend into our own experiences, and we, in a sort of spiritual time travel, re-experience them. Thus we announce at the Pesach Seder every year. Chayav adam lirot et atzmo ki'ilu hu yatza mimitzrayim. One must see oneself as if one had personally left Egypt. Through the Pesach Seder, the Exodus is re-experienced. In H.G. Wells' novel, The Time Machine, the time traveler attempts to argue for the possibility of time travel, saying, "That is just where the whole world has gone wrong. We are always getting away from the present moment. Our mental existences, which are immaterial and have no dimensions, are passing along the time dimension with a uniform velocity from the cradle to the grave, just as we should travel down if we began our existence 50 miles above the Earth's surface." And then another responds to the time traveler. But the great difficulty is this. You can move about in all directions of space, but you cannot move about in time. And he replies, that is the germ of my great discovery. But you are wrong to say that we cannot move about in time. For instance, if I am recalling an incident very vividly, I go back to the instant of its occurrence. I become absent-minded, as you say. I jump back for a moment. End quote. So argue the time traveler. In recollection, we are time traveling. He argues that just as when we jump, gravity pulls us back to Earth, so too in recollection, we actually journey through the fourth dimension, that is time. But for H.G. Wells, in this novel, memory is individualistic, and we can only remember, therefore, a few years back. But for Judaism, time travel through covenantal memory is collective and spans millennia. This is the unitive time consciousness. Which means, ladies and gentlemen, that a Judaism that does not treat time as elastic, a Judaism that focuses only on the present moment, rather than experientially re-experiencing what has occurred, is not a genuine Judaism. There is a Hebrew poem attributed originally to a medieval source, which was made into a popular song when I was young, and it went, Avar ayin v'hatid adayin v'ahova keharef ayin, da'aga min ayin. The past is no longer, the future is not yet, the present is but a blink of an eye. So why worry? But Rabbi Soloveitchik, I believe, discussing that poem, thought it was incorrect, because no Jew can say that the past is gone. No Jew can say that there is no reason to worry because the future is not here. The past is not gone, it is alive. And the future is something that we shape. There are moments, of course, when we focus on a precise point in time, on the here and now, and the transition from T1 to T2. It matters a great deal in Judaism whether one is experiencing Friday before sundown, when Shabbat has not yet set in, or a second after sundown. But Judaism does not live only in the moment. The past, as Rabbi Soloveitchik argues, is alive. And the elasticity of the Jewish leap year, through which an extra month is added and the month of spring is preserved, provides, in its own way, powerful, poetic symbolism of the elasticity of Jewish time itself. This leaves one question. Ideally, the calendar is supposed to be set through the Jewish Supreme Court, the Sanhedrin, and guided by witnesses that saw the moon. What then occurs in an age where there is no Sanhedrin? How does the Jewish set calendar function today? According to Nachmanides, at one point, understanding the difficulties of exile following the destruction of Jerusalem, the Sanhedrin declared all future Jewish months utilizing its authority before the Sanhedrin dispersed and disappeared. And it is on this authority that our Jewish calendar remains in effect today. But Maimonides, as explained by Rabbi Soloveitchik, has a slightly different approach. When the Sanhedrin proclaims new months, it does so as the representatives of the Jewish people, and especially the Jewish people that live in the Jewish homeland, that is the Jewish national home, the land of Israel. And so Maimonides argues, when there is no Sanhedrin, it is the very fact that Jews in the land of Israel are still marking a new month. That is what allows the Jewish calendar to function today for Jews around the world. Amazingly, Maimonides even adds that if at a certain point in Jewish history there would cease to be a Jewish presence in the Holy Land, then the calendars, akin to the plot of the film Groundhog Day, would grind to a halt. But Maimonides hastens to add that it has been guaranteed by God that there will always be a Jewish presence in the Holy Land, so that the calendar will never end. Thus is the continuity of the Jewish calendar a statement of the continuity of the Jewish connection to the land of Israel. What all this means is that to mark a moment in time is in truth to mark much more than that. It is to remember the miraculous founding of a people in the springtime in Egypt. It is to consider the link of a people to a land. And it is to reflect on the covenantal time travel, the unitive time consciousness of a people that has endured so much, but which continues onward into eternity. This is Meir Soloveitchik, looking forward to learning together tomorrow. Signing off.